Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
He was a teacher, access to a lot of young ladies. One of the main services we provide to law enforcement is victim identification. We work with them using software, facial recognition software, to look at if we like in this case, we find large numbers of photos and videos. We can assist law enforcement going through those and matching those up and trying to identify those to actual kids. We didn't find many. I don't think any that were not his daughters. But again, you know, these girls were pretty young. It would have progressively gotten worse and worse, because eventually these girls would have got too old. This addiction, this desire this guy has or he's sexually attracted to these prepubescent people, is not just going to go away when his daughters get too old. He's going to find new victims.
Was there any evidence that he was abusing his own daughters?
Just obviously the photographs that he was taking, and then through the child forensic interviews by both daughters disclosed abuse at the hands of the father, specifically rape, from a very young age.
I'm Steve Murphy, DEA Special Agent retired and now host of the Game of Crimes podcast. If you've seen the Netflix series Narcos, then you know my story. I now bring you stories of heroism and bravery from our law enforcement and military heroes, and occasionally from the criminals that they faced. Welcome to Game of Crimes. Hi, guys. Welcome back to this week's episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Thank you, folks, so much for coming back every week. I truly appreciate your support. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen us on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go to YouTube, in the search bar, type in Game of Crimes podcast, hit the subscribe button, listen to some of our episodes, like the ones, like all of them that you're going to like, and even send me your comments, because I'll read them. I may not respond to them, especially the nasty ones, but I'll still read them. But truly, I do appreciate you coming back. As you folks already know, you regular listeners, January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And we call that national here in the United States, but I think it's like that all around the world. And if you remember last year, I had two human trafficking specialists, I guess anti-human trafficking specialists, because they're not bad guys, they're good guys. And that was Tyler Schwab, who you just saw 2 weeks ago in here. And this year, the same as last year, Chad Melly is with us, coming from the other side of the world. I'm recording this at nighttime, and it's tomorrow morning where he is. So thank you for getting up, Chad. I appreciate that, brother. Thank you, man. And he was, if you want to see his first episode, go back to episode 181 that came out January of last year, of 2025. And you can see his, you hear his experiences there, but he's just in a nutshell. Chad was a sworn police officer here in the United States for more than 20 years. He was in Arkansas. Somewhere along the line, I think this might have been in the Arkansas Attorney General's office, he launched their cyber crimes division. And kind of ran that for a while, and then went to a sheriff's office and did that for 3 years before he retired. Did I get all that right, Chad?
Oh, that's correct. Yeah, that's it.
And by the way, welcome back to Game of Crimes, brother. It's good to have you in here.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, man.
All right. I said this when at Tyler's interview, and I said it last year in both the interviews, and I'll continue to say this. Anyone who would enslave another human being, especially children, is the lowest form of life on this earth. And I mean that. You heard me in Tyler's, and I'll say it again. The lowest thing on the earth is whale shit on the bottom of the ocean. And if you're involved in human trafficking, you're lower than that. And that's, we're going to keep preaching that message. I'm not the guy making cases. I'm not the guy going out working undercover. I'm not the guy rescuing victims. I'm just an old retired cop that's trying to bring more awareness and support these heroes that are out there that are risking their lives, giving up their time, and dedicated themselves to protecting people they don't even know. But they're people that are victims, and they're people that need to be rescued. So that's why it's so important that we do this at least twice in January to bring more awareness to the human trafficking issues. Okay, Chad, you know me. I'll go off on tangents every once in a while, but...
Well, I was going to say, I could agree with you more. These guys are, you know, absolute garbage. But I think the case study I have today is I think I could possibly top it. I mean, this is the worst of the worst.
Wow. I mean, you folks, they've seen me, Chad, on Tyler. When I've interviewed Tyler a couple of times, I've teared up. I've had to stop interviews with him. just because of the horrendous nature of the acts that are being committed against babies. Children just break your heart. Let's see. Just to get into this, because we're not going to do the small town police blotter this week because Chad has a couple cases we're going to talk about here, and that's much more important than making fun of criminals, at least today. But I want to go back in your law enforcement career just very quickly, Chad. Why did you pick law enforcement? Is that something you always wanted to do since you were a kid, or were you working off a beef with a judge? Or
I don't know. No, it wasn't working off a beef with a judge. Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was, I think back to that time, I got in really early. I think I just turned 22 when I went to the academy. I had went into the military straight out of high school. I mean, 2 days after I graduated, I was on a bus headed to basic training. So I was in the National Guard for 6 years. I got out of that. I really didn't know what I was going to do. I was just working in a small town. And it was, so this is back in the 90s, early 90s. Cops was a big show back then.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know. I just, it was just something about, and it was, at the time, it was, you know, a lot of the narcotics raids. I was just hooked on all the investigation that went into to work in narcotics and working undercover and making arrests and finding large drug seizures. So I just got hooked on it. I thought, you know, what the heck? I enjoyed the military, but law enforcement was just a direction that I wanted to go. So again, it was a small town, and I initially started up there. It didn't take long before I moved on to the Attorney General's office. But yeah, you know, it wasn't something that I knew as a child that I wanted to do. But you know, once I hit 18, 19, I needed something.
Yeah, something to keep you out of trouble instead of getting into trouble.
Yeah, you know, I really needed that. It could have went either way there for a while, for sure. It could have went either way.
I think that's true for most every cop that's out there. I know it was for me. Yeah. Luckily, I had an education at a very young age from a police officer that it scared me straight, I guess is a nice way to say it.
Yeah, that's great.
So now you're in Arkansas at a police department, and there you're just working patrol, right? You advance up through the ranks. I think you were in charge of the criminal investigations unit.
Sure, I did. Yeah, I started on patrol, worked patrol for a few years, and I had a canine, I had a drug detection dog. I worked him for a couple of years, and then moved up. I think I had been on patrol, including canine, for 5 or 6 years, before I finally got kind of slowly introduced into criminal investigations division. And then when I moved on to the Attorney General's office, a special agent there, then I was a special agent in charge of the cyber crimes unit. You know, I don't have a particularly extensive computer background, some limited college. I was just always drawn to it. You know, once in law enforcement, kind of as the internet hit, and, you know, in late 90s or mid 90s, where a lot of the computer crimes were starting to expand. You know, initially computer crimes, cyber crimes was financial crimes. And then all of a sudden, you know, CSAM related crimes started happening, a lot of online exploitation cases. I just kind of drifted towards that way. And, you know, through the ICAC program, the Internet Crime Against Children program in the U.S., they provide a lot of free training. I went to every piece of training, every type of training they had that they offered, went to it and got certified on a lot of different tools.
Wow. That's I'd say that's not something that I would have ever thought to pursue, especially the human trafficking, the child exploitation. I think I'm just, you know, certain people are made to handle certain things, and I don't think I'm made to handle that because it's, I mean, if we start talking about children here, I'll try to tear up with you.
No, and it's not something that I knew I was going to be drawn to. It's not something that I knew I would do exceptionally well at. I remember one of the very first cases that I did, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, we had just created our unit. I just got out of some of that training. I created some undercover accounts, put my profile in some chat rooms. I was just bombarded with messages. I mean, there's people. I was just blown away. And then the way I was able to interact with offenders, potential offenders, just it was just very smooth. It went very well, luckily for me. I had some really successful cases really early, and I had no idea I would be good at doing that. It's, you know, it's working undercover. It's not so much working undercover like in the DEA and other places where you're out face to face, you know, on behind a computer pretending to be somebody. But it went really well. We had some really successful cases.
And in case you guys missed Tyler's interview a couple weeks ago, This has grown into, according to statistics, there are roughly 49.6 million human trafficking victims in the world today. Over 49 million people are suffering from this horrendous crime. Yes. And of those, I understand about a quarter are children.
And yeah, in this case study we're going to do is young kids, 7 years old, 10-year-old.
You're going to make me cry, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to try not to. But.
Hey, brother, I've not apologized for that at all. I'm just thankful that the good Lord has still not hardened my heart, but maybe gotten softened it up somewhat, because I can be a real jerk sometimes. So on the cyber crimes, the cyber cases that you were working, you have to pretend to be somebody else. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is setting up profiles, just monitoring behavior, monitoring things that are going on in rooms. But then eventually, yeah, there's some type of engagement or some type of online engagement where I'm pretending to be a like-minded person. Maybe I'm a pedophile or a trafficker. But a lot of cases, I'm also posed as a victim.
And were your suspects when you first got started? Could you tell what countries they were in?
Yeah, so because of the tools I was working in the U.S., a lot of the cases were all localized cases. So I had software that kind of weeded out people that weren't within my jurisdiction. So at the time I was in Arkansas, so I was working the whole state. So I kind of knew who I was talking to, or at least knew generally where they were at, and progressed from there.
Wow. So did you even have to portray yourself as a young kid?
And I did. It was so funny. I had a list in my office, and I had to, with different things on there that people would ask me, like if I was pretending to be a 12 or 13 year old girl, I mean, I'm talking to horrible people, and they would ask things like what bra size am I, or what size panties do I wear, or about certain types of makeup and certain pop culture things like music. So I had a partner who was married and he had a daughter. So I called his wife one day and I was in the middle of a chat, and she's like, I said, hey, it's Chad. I'm working. I said, I'm going to ask you some questions. I need you to not freak out. She's like, what? I said, this guy's asking me questions about like bra size, and I have no idea. I'm supposed to be a 13-year-old girl, and this is a bad guy. I need to get him. So she's like, only you. She said, if anybody else called me and asked me this, I would be calling the police. She said, so only you. So she gave me the information. So I kept that. I had a piece of paper on my office that had all these details where if they asked me certain questions, they'd have to fumble around and look online or call somebody. I had quick access to it. It's crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, that's what you got to do, be successful. And I mean, that's part of undercover.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you have to be convincing. And it's those little small details that matter.
I asked you last time also, considering all the evidence that you're able to obtain against these perverts that are out there, once you arrest them, do the majority plead not guilty and go to trial, or do they plead guilty and try to work out a deal?
Yeah, a lot of them plead guilty. Most of them plead guilty, take whatever offers on the table, and just do their time. I've had a few times I had to go to trial. Normally those are federal cases we took federal, and the offenders were, I don't know how to say it, we're in a position to, maybe in a higher intellectual position, doctors or attorneys, that people that had a lot more to lose and a lot more money to throw at the case. And a few of them go to trial, but I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. None of the cases that I ever took to trial didn't lose. We won every one of them.
Wow. Congratulations. Good job. What takes a case from a state level up to a federal level? What's the difference between the two?
That's an interesting question. So it would basically be just a step based on criminal statutes. So in Arkansas, we have pretty good statutes on possession of C-SAM, on manufacturing C-SAM. There are a few cases where we had offenders traveling from one jurisdiction to another, going from one state, taking the victim from one state or going to another. So generally, most of the time, it would have been jurisdictional issues. You know, it was just easier to go federal where we didn't have to file charges in multiple states.
What about recidivism with these people? You got any statistics on that? I would think it's very high.
Yeah, I think it is high. You know, and the interesting thing about recidivism is it's people that are arrested again. It's not reoffenders. Unfortunately, these people, after they get arrested, after they go to prison, they learn from their behaviors, they become better at it. So it's kind of a tough thing to nail down. I think probably more of them reoffend than are recorded in the recidivism stats. And because I've interviewed hundreds of these offenders, and they've all told me, I mean, they knew what they were doing was wrong. They were trying to stop, but they couldn't. And they were absolutely addicted. I had one offender who was, as he was leaving, he was coming to meet somebody he thought was a 13-year-old girl. As he got in his car to come, the battery was dead. So his wife was home. He was trying to not awake his wife. His car battery was dead, so he got out, stopped for a minute, and thought, this is a sign from God. God is telling me not to do this. Mm-hmm. So then he went inside, switched keys, got his wife's car, put it in neutral, pushed it down the driveway, started it, drove 40 miles to where we were supposed to meet. As I'm sitting there with my team waiting to arrest him, I hear on the radio that he gets pulled over by a state trooper. And I hear the name because I already know my suspect. I know he's coming. We're at this predetermined meeting place. And I hear him get pulled over. And then I hear he has a warrant. You know, it's a trooper. I mean, telling a trooper not to arrest somebody, you know, it never goes well. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
So luckily, I know the trooper. I jump on the radio and I said, hey, V21, or give me a call. I call him on the phone. I explain to him what's going on. I said, hey, I got this guy. He's supposed to be coming to this occasion. It's like 2 in the morning. I said, can you do me a favor? Can you just not serve the warrant? I'll call you in an hour. You can come serve it at the jail.
Yeah.
So the warrant, the trooper's like, no problem. I won't serve it. Goes back to the car. As I'm interviewing the offender, he's like, well, that trooper stopped me. So I was sitting in my car thinking, man, I think I got a warrant. This is God's second sign that I shouldn't do this. God is speaking to me. First, he killed my battery. Now he got me stopped by a trooper. Trooper walks up there, says, hey, you're good to go. The offender says, thanks, takes all the stuff back, looks at the trooper, asks for directions to the location.
Oh, jeez.
Where he's coming to meet me. And then still shows up at the location. So, I mean, this is how strong the compulsion is. He got arrested, and he just couldn't believe it. I was like, why didn't you listen? It's like, I mean, I couldn't.
Unbelievable. It's hard to understand addictions. It is for me.
Yeah.
Whether it's drug addiction, alcohol, being a pervert. And you and I both know that, well, I've heard, but having been a cop for 38 years, I believe it true, that these convicted sex criminals live a pretty tough life in prison, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Especially out here. You know, one of the guys I arrested out here, I didn't arrest him. Our team supported a law enforcement unit that made the arrest and did all the hard work. I was there when he was arrested. And then I was there in court a year later when he showed up for court. And he was looking rough.
Yeah.
He was looking really rough.
Yeah. I know some of you folks out there probably think it's what I'm going to say is bad, but I'm okay with it. Considering what they
did. Yeah, no, I don't have a problem. And this guy, that particular guy is the guy we're going to talk about today. And he is an absolute evil monster.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Yeah. I mean, this is not somebody that became addicted to pornography or addicted to drugs and was breaking into somebody's house to support a habit. This person was evil from a young age and wasn't going to stop until he finally got locked up for life, which he finally did.
Wow. Why did you decide to retire from law enforcement?
Yeah, I didn't. I never officially retired. I took a year-long break to come up to Southeast Asia to work and collaborate with an NGO and collaborate with law enforcement, provide some training. It was kind of, I thought it would be great for my career. You know, exposed to a lot of trafficking and exploitation in Southeast Asia. You know, you have Thailand and Indonesia, and you have Malaysia and Cambodia and Vietnam. That was a one-year break. That was 8 years ago.
How many years?
8 years. Almost 8 years. And just, I don't know, it just sucked me in. Ever since I've been out here, it's, you know, the people, the law enforcement, the work, it's, you know, we're doing a lot of good things. It's tough to leave.
Fantastic. That's the longest training class I think I've ever heard of.
Yeah, right.
So you go overseas, and I'm not sure if we can say where you are or not.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Okay. But is that where you were back then? Or were you,
I think no, you were in Bangkok. I started off, yeah, I was in Bangkok. That's what's crazy. You know, I'm in Arkansas, Little Rock. It's still, 300,000 people maybe. I mean, it's still a pretty small town. And then all of a sudden I find myself, you know, in the middle of 12 million people in downtown Bangkok. I was wow. Absolutely wide-eyed and lost. I had done some travel. You know, it's not like it wasn't my first time leaving the country. But I've never seen anything like that.
Wow. Did you stay there very long? Or how did that progress from there?
Sure. I worked full-time supporting law enforcement in Bangkok for a little over 6 years. Moved out, just relocated, just kind of our operations expand. Other than doing operations, sometimes when I'm working with law enforcement, I'm just supporting them. We're just providing training, working on equipment, providing maintenance on equipment, things like that. And we're expanding outside of Thailand, which is why I recently moved. But I still manage a full-time investigative team based out of Bangkok. So do the bulk of our cases, operational cases, are still in Bangkok.
Was that organization paying you? Was it the Bangkok police paying you? How did you get paid?
Yeah, no, the NGO was being paid through an NGO at the time, and still, you know, now I'm a co-founder of an NGO. Draw a salary, doing the same thing.
And in case anybody doesn't know what an NGO is, can you explain a non-government organization?
Yeah, NGO, exactly. A non-government organization. It's just ours is a group of specific individuals. We're looking for International Protection Alliance. We look for people that have experience, similar background to me, online investigators, people that have experienced in human trafficking, online exploitation. We survive off of donations, 100% off of private donations that people provide to us. And we partner with law enforcement internationally outside of the U.S. and provide them training, provide them equipment, just whatever they need to work these types of cases. These are complex cases. They're expensive to work. The equipment that you have to use to work them is expensive. The training is expensive. So we come in, we can kind of service those law enforcement units that don't have huge budgets. You know, all of our training we provide is free. You know, if our donors allow us to, we're able to provide equipment, computers, all that's at no cost to law enforcement. And we're just there to kind of support them and collaborate. Sometimes act as subject matter experts and collaborate with them in working these cases. It's weird. It's a foreign concept to the U.S., right? That the U.S. law enforcement doesn't collaborate with NGOs, but not often, at least not operationally. And outside of the U.S., it's very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you and I had a conversation before we started recording about the United Nations Trafficking in Person Symposium this year. And listeners heard me go off on that during Tyler's interview. And if you didn't hear that, go back and listen to two episodes to go to that'd be episode 230, the second part, because I was fortunate enough. I was honored to be asked to attend and represent Libertas International at that, and went with some fantastic people, including two former victims, two young girls that just lived lives of hell. And thank goodness Libertas came in when the police discovered what was going on in Colombia. And these girls now are thriving, and they're becoming independent and self-sufficient, and all the things. But they're also becoming little girls again. It was kind of neat to see a little bit of the silliness that was going on. But I was just so disappointed with what I saw at the United Nations. And I won't beat that horn, that drum to death again. Okay. So now you're in Bangkok, and how did you end up in Kuala Lumpur?
So I left, I started my own NGO. Me and a few other guys from former NGOs left NGOs just basically out of frustration. I don't want to spend too much time talking bad, but there's issues with some NGOs. Funding issues and this direction, and some NGOs get so really, really big, kind of too big for the britches, in my opinion. And I don't know, there's lots of issues where I've always been the kind of guy where I just want to work. I just want to support law enforcement. You know, I don't need a lot of any outside input or any outside interference. Just, you know, cops working with cops, working cases. And that's all we wanted to do. And it got very complicated for all of us with these other NGOs. And we all at the same time got to the point where we're all ready to do something. And for all of us, it was either go back to our home countries. From the U.S., obviously, one of the other co-founders is from Australia. We're all ready to pack up and go home. And somebody made a comment and said, the only way I would work for another NGO in this field, in this area, is if it was one that we ran. And then we all just kind of looked at each other and said, well, why don't we do that? We've been here enough. We have enough experience. We have a lot of contacts. Let's do that. So we did. And it came together really fast. We've been up and running for just over a year. We're doing some great things, making a lot of cases, making a lot of arrests. But it was kind of out of frustration. We were just, you know, the work is there. If you just get out of the way and put all that other garbage out of the way and just focus on the work, there's plenty of work. And there, you know, there's a little bit of infighting and people that don't want to collaborate. There's just lots of different frustrations, as you can imagine. People from all over the world coming together. I should have looked up the number before the show. There's a lot of NGOs in Southeast Asia focusing on trafficking and focusing on online exploitation. And a lot of them are great. But there's some, just like anything, that aren't so great and make things difficult.
And if everybody, you want to learn a little bit more about International Protection Alliance, go to their website. It's internationalprotectionalliance.org.
Protectaw.org.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Protectaw. So I mean, I'm looking at your old website. I'm sorry about that. So protectaw.org. And on the website, it shows just a vision statement. And it is, envisioning a secure digital world, our alliance protects children globally with advanced technology, supports survivors, and fosters a united, safe online environment for future generations. International, this Protection Alliance is a 501c3 tax-exempt charity. So check them out there. We're going to talk more about that, and I'll put a screen up here for those that are watching on YouTube, and those that you are listening, go to YouTube and watch, please. That's like a cheesy commercial in there, isn't it?
That got thrown in.
Yeah, and when it's your show, you get to do things like that. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of what you do here. Chad reached out to me just a couple weeks ago, and I'm so glad he did, because of January being National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And we did it last year. We're doing it again this year. I think it's perfect. But he said he's got a case he wants to talk about. And when these guys tell me there's a specific case they want to talk about, I know I want to listen. So, Chad, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you run with it, brother.
Sure. Okay. So this is it's a few years back. It's not a super old case. And it was the reason I want to talk about it is because it kind of highlights a lot of different parts of how offenders find victims, talks about, or it'll show this criminal's past, how many chances he had, how his behavior developed over time, and also shows on the investigative side the collaboration between NGOs and law enforcement. So a lot of the work that we do is just it's account maintenance, right? Lots of undercover personas, whether it's different email accounts or it's different social media accounts or whatever it is, online dating accounts. Offenders find victims anywhere victims are at online. Probably predominantly, most of our victims are recruited or found by offenders on social media. This is the same social media everybody uses: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I don't care, TikTok, that's where they find them. Or on chat rooms. This one in particular was a chat room. It was a Kik chat room. Kik is a online chat or a mobile platform, chat platform for mobile phones. And there was a group, and our investigators are trained to just kind of look for very subtle things that might indicate that there's some type of trafficking or some type of exploitation going on. And the name of this group was Thai, T-H-A-I, 10 and up. The profile photo was just two girls. These are two It's just clip art downloaded from the internet. It's two young ladies, about 8 years old, dressed in traditional Thai clothing, kind of like festival clothing. But that's it. So that was a group, Thai 10 and up, which to me means a lot. It says a lot, 10 and up. Right. That's not something you would normally put in a chat group. Offenders, especially pedophiles, refer to their age preference of victims as a certain number and up. So if it's an offender, you know, I've chatted with offenders who were, you know, birth to six. You know, they were interested in, I don't know. And so any range. This particular range was 10 and up. As soon as I saw that, I saw Thai 10 and up. I thought this is a group that we need to have some profiles in and just monitor the behavior. And that's what we did. This is not an account that we previously received complaints on. This was just looking at accounts, looking at hashtags, using the hashtag Thailand or Thai, and seeing what we could find. It's kind of a cold case. Walked right into it, put a couple profiles in there, and just monitored the behavior.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It was very quickly. It was just weird at first. So initially, we were greeted by a young lady, a female profile of a young lady, who directed us to her Twitter page. With her Twitter page, it's a girl about 10 years old. And she's communicating with the entire chat group in English, nearly perfect English. And they're talking about random things, about Thailand, about the U.S. and other places where other offenders are. I think there's 23 different countries represented in this group. This is a large group. She says she's 10 years old. You can go to her link. She has links to her social media on there. You can go to her Twitter. She had Facebook. She had Instagram. And she was an aspiring model. She said she was an aspiring model and that she was, her family had created this group because they were searching out amateur photographers. They wanted to pair amateur photographers with her, an amateur model, where photographers could practice taking photos. She could practice being a model. And everybody would benefit, and photographers would get experience. She would get a lot of photos. It's weird that a 10-year-old would be moderating this room, right? I mean, that's pretty young to do.
Right.
So that was immediately something that jumped out at us. So we observed for a couple of days, and just based on the things she was saying and kind of the sexual innuendos, there was a lot of flirtatious things going on in the group, back and forth between her and some of the members. It's pretty apparent that probably wasn't a 10-year-old girl. There's got to be somebody behind this. I mean, right. A 10-year-old girl moderating a kick group, moderating her own Twitter page, her own Facebook page, and then a Facebook group, multiple Instagram pages. I mean, she clearly is. There's photos of a 10-year-old girl. And she's posting videos of her talking, so the 10-year-old girl is real. But when she's talking very much broken English. Not as fluently as she's typing. The photographs on all of her social media were inappropriate. Some of them, they're being classified as child erotica. Just as an example, on one of her Facebook pages, it was a group page for child models. Somebody had left a review. A random citizen, a young lady named Trinity, had left a review and said, "This is disgusting. This is absolutely inappropriate. This is clearly some pedophile's, you know, account that they're using to draw children in and to recruit children." And she nailed it 100%. That's exactly what it was. So we're looking at it, and we see all of this social media, again, all being moderated by a 10-year-old girl, and it can't be her. So we decide to engage. So by engaging, I'm going to start communicating. So my undercover, the account I was using, I was pretending to be an amateur photographer. I'd stolen actually a bunch of photos from somebody that I worked with who was kind of an amateur photographer. I put them on my page, and then sent a message just to see if I could book this girl for a photo shoot. Instantly, as soon as I sent the message, I got a response from somebody pretending Well, somebody saying they were her father. And he just said, hey, I saw that you joined the group. I'm the young lady's father. I don't really get in the way. You're welcome to do a photo shoot with her. You know, where he told me what city he was in. I told him what city I was in Bangkok. He said, whatever the rules are, those are up to her. I let her set the rules. As long as she's safe, as long as you're safe, you can take photos of her. And all these flags are going up, right? This is not how a father should be talking about a stranger who's wanting to come photograph his 10-year-old daughter.
Heck no.
Right? So lots of red flags going up. And he continues, and he kind of lays down the groundwork, which there are no ground rules. The ground rules are whatever the young lady says she's comfortable doing, I can do. Can't push beyond that. Whatever photos I took, I had to leave copies with them. And initially, he said he's not going to charge me. It's like, okay, great. So as an investigator, I'm thinking, you know, what the hell's going on here? Is this one person pretending to be multiple people, or like what's happening? I'm not sure what's going on. So he puts me in touch with her. Says, okay, I'm going to let you continue your chat with her, and you guys can set up the photo shoot. So I start communicating with her, and right away, she gets into it. Now, remember, this is a 10-year-old girl. And she says, what kind of photos do you want? She says, I do regular photos, indoor, outdoor. If you want to do any, like, nighttime photos, me in my pajamas, I want you to be aware I sleep nude.
She was
a 10-year-old girl. She sleeps nude.
Jeez.
So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, again, what's happening? Is this the same person? You know, I don't know. So, you know, I instantly replied to her and like, hey, I said, I'm not interested in doing nude photos. But you kind of caught me off guard. We were just doing normal photos, regular photos, you know, clothes photos, indoor, outdoor. Just, you know, I want to practice taking photos in multiple settings. And I don't want any trouble with your dad or the police. Do you take nude photos? And then she started talking. This person starts telling me that, yeah, you know, I do a lot of nude photos. Some people come in and take photos. I do nude photos indoor, outdoor. I said, does your dad know? I was just kind of playing the game. Again, I'm pretty certain I'm not talking to a 10-year-old. And she says, it doesn't matter. It's up to me. You know, when somebody comes over to do a photo shoot, we have a studio in our home. Everybody leaves. It's just me and the photographer. And I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. And then she sends a photo. And it's a partially nude photo from one of the photo shoots. So we immediately turn this over to our you know, law enforcement counterparts that are working this case. And we start looking, using some... Because, you know, at the time, you know, I'm with an NGO. I've no law enforcement authority there. Obviously, this is a case. Once we initially found it, was initially reported to law enforcement. Law enforcement at that time, we had an MOU in place where we were able to work with that law enforcement unit where they were specifically requesting our expertise in these types of cases. And they allowed us to proceed in the case. And then they started, we were able to get phone numbers, look at email addresses, and try to identify who these people were. We finally identify that the young lady, her father is an Austrian citizen. He's from the country of Austria. He'd been in the country for, I don't know, 10 years, 20, 15 years. He'd been there for quite a while. So I start looking for information on him. We do a lot of OSINT, open source investigation, and just using social media, looking at anything online to find out if somebody's ever been arrested. It's usually pretty easy to find information if somebody's been arrested, specifically somebody that, if they're a pedophile, they've been arrested for some type of sex crime against a child. You know, there's a lot of media coverage on that. There's a lot of databases that'll come up worldwide. And I could find nothing on this person. He's an Austrian citizen. I have his full name. I have his date of birth. Nothing. I can't find anything on him. I wasn't aware of the Austrian privacy laws at the time. They're pretty strict. They don't release names of offenders. Like, it's, if somebody's been arrested in Austria, you're not going to find much about it. Okay, so we, you know, I received the photo. Now we decide, okay, we need to expand. Something's going on here. This is not a 10-year-old girl. And beyond the photo, in one of the chats, this is during COVID time. This is right during COVID. So there were some travel restrictions in place. And the person pretending to be this 10-year-old girl was communicating with members of the group and relaying information that it's impossible for a 10-year-old to know, like mileage between cities, how long it would take to drive.
Jeez.
Yeah, you know, like mileage in kilometers, like down, I mean, actual correct. Like there's no way, there's no way this is a 10-year-old girl. But we're going to pursue it. We're going to just kind of keep chugging along here and see where this takes us, because it's just not making sense. Finally identified the father. The father is a teacher. He's her teacher in the town that she lives in. He speaks Thai, speaks English. He's from Austria. He'd been in the country for a lot of years. So we look at his criminal history, you know, through the help of law enforcement, to figure out, has this guy ever been arrested before? Yeah, a lot. Started when he was a teenager. There had been allegations made where he had sexually assaulted a couple young boys, a couple young girls, all victims, kind of victims of opportunity, just people that were siblings of people he was dating or children of people he was dating. On and off, he's kind of, allegations are made, he's brought in, and he's let go. And finally, he commits an offense bad enough that he gets locked up. He gets locked up for 2 years in Austria. He had sexually assaulted, I believe it was his stepdaughter. So it was a lady he's married to. She had a stepdaughter. He sexually assaults her, gets sentenced to 2 years in prison, serves his time, gets out. We talked about recidivism, gets out, immediately reoffends on the same victim again.
Oh,
goes back to prison for 3 years, gets out of prison, and then we talked about the problem with recidivism is, in order to be a statistic for recidivism, you have to be arrested again. It doesn't take into account people that reoffend, people that get smarter. Well, this is what this offender did. This offender got out of prison the second time, and he decides, listen, I mean, clearly he's not getting away with this in Austria. He keeps getting reported. He keeps getting arrested. He keeps going to prison. So what does he do? Packs up everything. He moves to Southeast Asia, meets a woman. This is planned. This is not just accidental. You can see by his behavior. Meets a woman, produces two kids, has two biological daughters. They're both born. After the second daughter, I think, is 4 years old. The first one is probably 7 at the time. He divorces the mom, gives her an amount of money. Off she goes, wherever she goes, and he keeps both girls. And this is just, this is what this offender did. This evil piece of garbage made 2 victims. That's why he went to this country. That's why he met a woman, produced 2 victims. And it's my opinion, at this point, we're learning this. We're like, is this what's happening? Is this the father behind these accounts? And he's putting this girl up there like she's this overstimulated, over-sexualized young lady. And it's not. It's him. He's behind these accounts. And so we're working with law enforcement. We're trying to determine this. And what comes back to us, be very careful with this offender. This offender is, he's been in and out of the system. He understands the system. He knows how these things work. He has sued multiple people that had made allegations or gone after him in some capacity in his home country and made a lot of trouble for people. And it was highly recommended from his home country that we proceed very carefully, with this guy, which to us was, meant nothing. There's no way we're going to let this guy get away. But what, the hurdle is, how do you prove this? Is this guy really behind these accounts? Is he the one that's really administering these accounts and moderating these accounts? We spent 2 years on this case, continuing to chat, trying to develop the case, trying to find investigative strategies. We had cameras up, cameras at the location, monitoring the house where we could see people who were coming and going. It's kind of a like a pole camera, like you might use it in a narcotics case, trying to develop some type of lead to identify, you know, something that would give us more information and allow law enforcement to act. And we went to law enforcement. We said, what do you need? I mean, what's the next step for us? What can we do to get a search warrant to get access to his devices? And they said, we need proof that she's not the one sending photos. She's not the one communicating that it's her dad. So we sat for a while and we came up with an investigative strategy of, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to book her for a photo shoot. And we need to separate her from her device, right? So we put together a local team. It's a team of local investigators that I've been working with for a few years that we had trained. A really good team. Created a fake modeling agency. Made contact through the web, through the chat room, just like I had previously, and said, "Hey, we want to book this young lady for a photo shoot." Kind of went through the same process of being vetted, talked to the dad. The dad put the group back in touch with the daughter. And they made an agreement to, hey, we're gonna travel to her location. We're going to pick her up. We're going to take her to a local mall. And we're gonna do a photo shoot with her. The dad agrees. So our team shows up. Obviously, everybody's wearing cameras. You know, we have pinhole cameras and bag cameras and hat cameras and glasses cameras. Everything's being monitored. We're back at our operations center, kind of monitoring what's going on. The team arrives there to pick up the daughter. The father's there. They see the makeshift modeling studio in the house, which is a blanket nailed up on the wall and a couch in front of it. Very creepy, lots of red flags. We see that she has the girl's 10 years old. She also has a 7-year-old sister who's also, according to the dad, an aspiring model. It's very similar social media pages. Very inappropriate type of content. And our team takes them to the mall. We set up a camera where we're recording video the entire time, monitoring the young lady. Tell the dad, hey, it's going to be a couple hours. You can hang out, go walk to the mall, whatever you want to do. And he says, okay, yeah, I'm going to walk to the mall. So we have her device, right? We ask her to put her device down. So we see her device. We see her. We're doing a photo. They're doing a photo shoot, taking photos of her. And then I'm back at the operations center and I get notified, okay, she's separate from her device. She's on camera. We're monitoring her. There's a surveillance team following the father around the mall. I said, okay, great. So initiate communications with the social media that's supposed to belong to her, the one where the inappropriate photo was sent. And our surveillance team is watching him. He sits down on a bench when the phone goes off, and he's messaging. And it's some of the best work I've ever seen from a surveillance team. And this is a non-law enforcement trained surveillance team. Average age of this team, there's 5 or 6 people on the team. I think they're the oldest person on the team was 25 at the time. This is a young team. Uh-huh. One of the surveillance team members is 2 levels above him in the mall, looking down, and he has a camera and he's able to see the screen, and he records video of him, and it's one of my undercover social media accounts. I'll use the name Alex, and you can see him communicating with Alex, pretending to be the daughter. So right there, I mean, boom, that's the information we needed. That, okay, the father is a person behind these accounts. Again, this is the same account that sent the inappropriate images. That's enough to get law enforcement to action it. Immediately, once they get that information, we show them the video. There's not much she can defend against it, and they serve a search warrant at the house to seize the devices. He mentioned, the home modeling studio there. They wanted to take photos of that. And so I'm there as a subject matter expert, just watching the police do their thing. They're very thorough, very well trained. And then at the scene, they asked me to come in, looking at a particular room that is a computer room. It is a big computer. And he had a binder, just like a a booklet he had made. And it was on the front cover, it was a black and white photograph of some type of a medical journal. Back in the day, a lot of pedophiles would go to the library and check these out. They're kind of like medical journals documenting things like the development of prepubescent females, right? It was a medical journal. It would show girls in various stages up to about 14 or 15 years old. But, you know, they contain nude photos of girls. Now, these are not sexually explicit photos. You know, these are medical-type photos discussing development of young females and young boys. Very common. I saw that early on in my career as I was searching offenders' houses and finding different types of child sexual abuse material, CSAM. So I saw that. I thought, man, this is weird. It's not weird. It's odd. I wouldn't expect to find this here. And they're flipping through the journal, going through it, and it's just photocopied, black and white photocopies of you know, the development of prepubescent females, you know, breast development, hip development, everything. And then, boom, you turn the page, and now instead of photos from the medical journal, it's photos of his children that he's packaged into this. So he's already building a fence. You know, these are not sexually explicit photos of my daughters. I'm comparing these photos to developing females from a medical journal. Absolutely disgusting. And so they're flipping through it, and the photos get worse and worse as you go. And I'm not going to go into it, but they become more sexually explicit beyond what would be in a medical journal. And these are this is a 7-year-old girl and a 10-year-old girl. And then all of a sudden, one of the officers going through the journal stops, and they're speaking in a language in Thai, I don't understand what they're saying. They're talking to each other, and they keep looking at me. And I'm just sitting there kind of waiting to see if they need any assistance or anything or any equipment. And they're looking at me, and I'm in the room, and I'm starting to get nervous. I'm like, what have I done? And they start pointing at me, and then we have an interpreter there, and the interpreter asked me to stand up. And I was sitting on a cartoon duck pillow. It was a pillow with a cartoon duck face on it. Not Donald Duck, but a generic duck face. Mm-hmm. And they show me a photo, and there's a photo of one of the girls, extremely vile photo, very sexually explicit, and she's laying on a bed, and that pillow's in the photo, that exact pillow. And then as you're going through there, then they start matching up windows and draperies. You know how these investigations go.
Right.
All over the house, every single room. And, you know, the police are speaking to the father, and 100%, he's already prepared for this. He has no idea what anybody's talking about. These are anything that's being done, and these photographs are between his daughter and these photographers. He doesn't know anything about it. You know, he starts immediately throwing the children under the bus. These are, you know, out of control, overstimulated, just, you know, girls that are, you know, he's had trouble with since they're really young. Absolutely disgusting.
Absolutely.
To not only allow this, but to then not step up as a man and say, you got me. What I've been doing is horrible. You know, get my kids help. He absolutely throws them under the bus. This is absolutely horrible.
Real stand-up guy.
Yeah, right.
What a piece. What kind of money do they make off of that?
Not much. I mean, he was charging. So some of the photographers, he was charging to come in and allowing them to take photos of his daughter. He had specific instructions for them, and then some of those photographers that were eventually arrested as well were engaging in sexual contact with the older daughter, and he was getting to the equivalent of about $15 per visit. It's not about the money. A lot of these offenders, some offenders, it is about the money. Some it's about the sexuality of it. It's the desire to that's what brings him in. Now he just wanted to. He couldn't do it by himself because there's no defense there. He had to involve other people so he could blame other people. But it didn't work. He obviously got arrested. The girls were forensically interviewed by child forensic interviewers. Both girls disclosed horrible abuse from when they were the oldest. It started when the oldest was about 7. She's 10 now, almost 11 at the time. Her younger sister was just turning 7, so it was about to start for her. It was horrible. Jeez. And this is somebody that planned this. He made these children to do this.
Wow. Did the children not have any contact with their mom at all after the divorce?
At the time, no. Very minimal contact. These children, this is one of the hardest things to talk about, because it's the sexual abuse, the visual aspect of it, it's horrible enough. But I've seen this a lot of times, and I saw it in this case, where these children are absolutely brainwashed, manipulated, had no indication that what was happening was not something that was normal and was supposed to be happening to a child. Mm-hmm. At the hands of their own father. Now, this is as she aged and she had remained in that behavior and then became more social and had more friendship and started understanding this is not normal. But at 7 and 10 years old, these girls thought this is what happened to everybody at home. And he was a teacher. He had access to a lot of young ladies. We were never able. One of the things we do. One of the main services we provide to law enforcement is victim identification. We work with them using software, facial recognition software, to look at if we find large numbers of photos and videos. We can assist law enforcement going through those and matching those up and trying to identify those to actual kids. We didn't find many, or I don't think any, that were not his daughters. But again, you know, these girls were pretty young. It would have just progressively gotten worse and worse and worse, because eventually these girls would have got too old, and then this addiction, or whatever you want to call it, this desire this guy has to, you know, that where he's sexually attracted to these prepubescent people, is not just going to go away when his daughters get too old. He's going to find new victims.
Was there any evidence that he was abusing his own daughters?
Just obviously the photographs that he was taking, and then through the child forensic interviews by both daughters disclosed abuse at the hands of the father, specifically rape, from a very young age.
Nasty. I've never been to that part of the world, but you guys got access to the latest and greatest tech equipment, it sounds like.
And we've got some good stuff. Yeah, we do. We've got some good stuff. And, you know, and the law enforcement up there, they're well-trained. I mean, they're very responsive to these types of cases, whether they're foreign victims, local victims. It's for a lot of agencies worldwide. It's money. It's buying the equipment. It's buying the software. It's maintaining the license. You know, because we want these things to be admissible, so we want it to be licensed software. We want the investigators to be certified and trained on it, so that it's admissible. And we get this guy, I guess, to go to prison and. You know, in this case, you know, it all worked out, but yeah, it's bad stuff.
You mentioned a non-law enforcement surveillance team. Is that common over there?
Yes. So, it's not in these types of cases. It is now. Anytime we do surveillance, law enforcement is either assisting us, and I think they had one or two certified law enforcement officers with them during that operation. If they're not with us at the time, they'll have to kind of recreate it. If we say, hey, we saw these things at this location that are relevant to the case, and we'll do a report, then they'll come in. If they're not with us at the time, they'll come in and kind of vet that information and double check it and make sure it's credible. And it is. There's so many cases of whether it's trafficking or online exploitation. I mean, there's only so many officers. So one of the ways law enforcement collaborates with NGOs kind of in that region of the world is kind of manpower doing surveillance, doing some undercover things. And in this case, this sounds like an exploitation case. This is a trafficking case. It's clearly an online exploitation case. That's how we found the offender. He was exploiting the daughters. He had to advertise them to get people to come in. He was running a pretty good CCM distribution group. Again, not for money, just to collect and exchange images with other offenders. But this is also a trafficking case. The fact that he's selling his daughters and allowing people to come in and abuse them, you know, that allowed them to charge human trafficking as well, on top of the obvious sex crimes.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, Chad, after listening to all this, Let's take a break here. And we've been going, we're right at an hour now. Just unbelievable. I'm sitting here with my chin on the desk half the time while you're talking. Just, you think you've heard it all? Oh my gosh, it's just horrendous what people continually come up with, and the different angles. And you look at this guy, and he was abusing his stepdaughter, and he only got 2 years. I mean, that, to me, that's amazing. And then he did it again, and he only got 3 years. Those kind of people, I'm ready to lock them up and throw the key away.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Clearly it was in this case, yeah.
All right. Well, buddy, thank you very much for hanging in there, and thank you for agreeing to come back for a second episode tomorrow. Everybody, thank you for continuing to come. I'm at a loss for words. It was the same way with Tyler. I don't know what to say when you hear about these demons that are walking around on the face of our earth here. And I'm not laughing out of being funny. It's just amazing. It's amazing. And from an experienced police officer, it's still amazing. Thank God we've got people like Chad and his company and his co-founders that are out there fighting the good fight. They operate off of donations. You'll see here on the screen right now, if you're listening or if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see the placard for the organization where you can make donations. You go to their homepage, and I'm looking at it right now, and you scroll down just a little bit on the page, and you'll see the donate buttons. Just like the other organizations we talk about, every penny helps. These guys, they've got to maintain a place to live. They've got to eat. I don't know if they have families with them or not. We're not going to ask about that because we don't want to jeopardize anybody's safety. But you're looking for a good place to donate some money. There you go. All right, so we're going to finish up today. Thank you again for joining us. Please come back tomorrow. I can't say that it's going to be any brighter than what today was. I know there's another case we're going to talk about here, but I do appreciate you guys. So until then, God bless.
Guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.